morning. Keelan, could you please call the roll?
Good morning, Mayor. Udaly. Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city's made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. And next, we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. First up is communications, item 916.
Request of Tony Davis to address council regarding accepting responsibility for promises made, promises broken.
Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay, I'm going to just jump right on into it because I only have 3 minutes. So I would like to state, Mr. Wheeler, you were first elected into office by the residents to defend and protect Portland against actions that would cause the city harm. You have done the opposite, and the city of Portland and the residents have suffered tremendously since the incident of George Floyd's death. And I say incident because in America, people are innocent until proven guilty, and that is done by a jury, not by the opinions of the people. Since this began, Mr. Wheeler, I have watched you continually use the black race and the black community as an excuse to support your own political agenda. Mr. Wheeler, you have used both the black race and, Mr. Wheeler, you have supported and allowed peaceful protesting to be infiltrated by anarchists and continued calling it peaceful protesting. You stood in solidarity with the violence and allowed our city to turn into a cesspool of anarchists who have no value, morals, nor concern for human life. They spread their message through anger, chaos, and destruction. You screwed up when they took it to your front door and you boldly got on national TV and said you would not stand for this violence. The worst thing you did was show continual support of these anarchists after one of them gunned down a Trump supporter in downtown Portland. You demanded people leave who were here to defend and protect us. Since this began, you allowed the white race to be called racist, white supremacist, and white privileged when they tried to defend themselves. The white race has the same right as anyone else to defend themselves without disrespect and violence. Your response to being elected again was thank you, but what you really need to understand is your re-election only occurred as how does a person choose between two of the devil's advocates? You deserted people of the city and supported the destruction of our downtown businesses. You ignored residents begging you. They were begging you to stop this and allow our police to do what was needed to control the situation. You allowed our officers to suffer the consequences from actions of other individuals and followed that and allowed them to be spit on, abused, and humiliated. You not only put residents in danger by demanding police focus on one area of the city, you also destroyed Portland's reputation and beauty. You have done this all in the name of political power and the hate you have for our president. Mr. Wheeler, your words of moving on will not be accepted by some residents until you stand up and take and accept the responsibility of actions that occurred in the city. Mr. Wheeler, you continue to disregard other communities and their desperate cries for help. You have cut Portland Police Bureau's funds and made promises these funds would clean up our city. That's a lie, as the homeless situation has tripled and continues to grow, not for the reason of COVID-19, as you and your counterpart Hardesty has stated. Mr. Wheeler, others may be able to move on, but not me. I am here to tell you, I will. I don't know how, but I will do everything in my power to make sure you follow through on those promises you have made to Portland residents. I am standing up for those people whose voices are that you refuse to listen to. And for God's sake, stop including in your statements all Oregonians, because there is no way on God's earth you speak for me. Lastly, Mr. Wheeler, I pray every night by the grace of God, you, Brown, and Hardesty will be exactly where you all belong, and that's in jail. I'm done. Well,
thank you for that entertaining perspective. Next up,
entertaining perspective?
917.
Entertaining?
917, please.
Request of Marie Tyball to address council regarding concerns about taxpayer-funded land use.
Good morning. Marie, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear. You're good to go. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council members. I'll begin with a 2019 City of Portland report titled Historical Context of Racist Planning, a history of how planning segregated Portland, and I quote, Portland has a well-documented racist history, especially in land use. Exclusionary zoning, racially restrictive covenants, and redlining are early examples of this, with their effects still visible today. This report goes on to single out Southwest Neighborhood Associations as undeniably complicit in this racist history. To quote, Southwest residents tended to be well-educated, higher income, and typically white, much more organized and well-resourced than Albina and outer Southeast residents. And people in Southwest were more effective at using neighborhood associations as a tool for organizing at public hearings and other places for public participation. This effectiveness in Southwest Portland unfortunately continues to this day. As noted in today's OPB article revealing Amanda Fritz's use of her personal email to Sweeney, where she advocated for bridge funding in advance of the audit findings and asked which commissioner they would prefer to oversee them. Southwest Neighborhoods Inc., or Sweeney, is one of Portland's seven district coalitions and it has a land use committee. In this year alone, the Sweeney Land Use Committee opposed House Bill 2001 and the residential infill project, both designed to add more density through housing to single family zoned residential neighborhoods. By way of example, the Land Use Committee meeting minutes for July of this year show that only five people, all white identifying to my knowledge, voted to bring the motion opposing House Bill 2001 to the Sweeney Board for consideration. The meeting minutes state that Gary Rundy, the committee chair, Dave and Dixie Johnston, Susan King, Greg Dorrels, and Mel Jones all voted yes on the motion. Let's get to know some of these land use representatives through their own words. Gary Rundy, the current chair, stated at the October 2019 Sweeney Board meeting referring to the historical context of racist planning report, and I quote, I have read it in complete detail several times, and I have elected not to bring it into land use at this time. It is just a perspective. It's not saying here, go do these things. end quote. It probably won't come as a big surprise to know that only the week before, Gary voted against bringing equity and inclusion training to the Sweeney Board. Dave and Dixie Johnston, representatives of Collins View Neighborhood Association, have consistently attended committee meetings since at least 2008. In fact, a Collins View representative attended 107 meetings since 2008 out of a total of 126 meetings of the committee. However, they recently submitted their resignation on November 24th over statements they made to the Sweeney Land Use Committee Google group. And I quote, "The extent to which informal segregation may still exist or be due to past lack of economic opportunity is largely a matter of political opinion. With regard to Collins View, we are aware of Black, Asian, and Hispanic households in the more affluent parts of our neighborhood," end quote. It's important to note that Dave and Dixie stated that they would continue to attend committee meetings as visitors. Finally, I am worried that the city of Portland is also undeniably complicit through its support of neighborhood associations and land use appeal waivers. I don't think a lot of people know that the city does not require neighborhood associations to pay the $1,000 fee required to appeal a land use decision. As an example, between 2016 and 2019, neighborhood associations submitted approximately 35 land use appeals out of a total of approximately 77 submitted during that time. Of those 35 land use appeals, 33 had the fee waived. In other words, Portland effectively subsidized neighborhood association land use lobbying efforts to the tune of approximately $33,000 over a four-year period. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, appreciate it. Keelan, the next individual is 918.
Request of Grady Preston II to address council regarding police brutality.
Good morning.
Hi, yes, good morning. Is there a option so I could share the videos that I wanted to share?
Those videos were shared with council prior to the meeting. I think I have sent you a message that there wouldn't be enough time in the 3 minutes to share all the videos that you sent.
Okay, so you're saying that's not possible to share those, okay. Well, I also had some pictures I wanted to share. There's just some visual elements that really helped orchestrate the message I was trying to send.
Grady, you can ask council if they approve showing the images.
There was a couple. There was an image of a graph I wanted to show and some videos, but if that's not going to happen, that's fine. We can go ahead, if we can start my time now, I'll just go ahead and start talking. Hello, my name is Grady Preston II. I'm a homeowner living in Southeast Portland. Today I wish to address the ongoing violence that our police commissioner, which is a position the mayor continues to give himself, has condoned for the last 200 nights. He has used words to condemn them, but his actions scream support for these repeated violent attacks on our community by his own employees. Today, I would have liked to show a few clips from a library of over 300 incidents of police brutality recorded in Portland alone. The first two clips I wanted to show you show the same incident from two different angles. You can watch as multiple officers swarm an individual for recording an act of brutality by one of the mayor's own employees. The next, you see a clip that shows The next clip shows indiscriminate use of chemical weapons by the mayor's employees. There was an image of downtown Portland just covered in a heavy fog of chemical warfare weapons. And next was a video clip you see of a cyclist trying to leave an area instructed before he's tackled and beaten by the mayor's employees. The next was a video showing the ruthlessness of the mayor's employees when they encounter press. It shows two people being talked to by the police. He tries to give them his press badge, show them his press badge. The officer then tells him to leave, whereas then they get with the press badge, asks him for his name. The officer refuses to give him his name and then arrests the press person. Finally, the footage in the last few examples show the mayor's employees continue to attack our community. So I mean, without the footage, it doesn't really say much, but also in the last two quarters, we have seen over 6,000 use of force so far this year by the Portland police, something else that continues to happen every night. It's been 219 nights since George Floyd's murder, and every night we are on the streets and we are asking you to act, and you refuse to act. We know you cowardly pushed back that vote so that we wouldn't know your views before the election, but you know, we are watching and we want this to be fixed. We don't want to be hit and attacked by our own community members. We want to be able to protest, and that is our right, and you are refusing our right. So that's it. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next up is 918.
Mayor, 919.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, I screwed that up. 919.
Okay, thank you. Request of Lizzie Sampson to address council regarding water fluoridation.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you all hear me?
Yep, you sound great.
Oh, excellent. Hello, council. My name is Lizzie Sampson, and I am a registered nurse at a local hospital here in Portland. I want to be clear that I'm not representing any particular organization. I'm speaking about water fluoridation and have it be considered a priority to the city council. The American Dental Association is in favor of community fluoridation. The organization cites fluoridation as the single most effective public health measure to prevent tooth decay. According to the CDC, there is evidence that oral health is linked to diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. In pregnant women, oral health has also been associated with premature births and low birth weight. Additionally, providing water fluoridation in the Portland water supply is a public health, social justice, and health equality opportunity. In a time when inequity is so prevalent in our day-to-day, I urge the council to use as many means-tested tools as we have available. I know that Portland has been against water fluoridation in the past. If we look at recent measures such as legalization of marijuana and the legalized trial of psilocybin as a mental health tool, we can see that Portland has been ahead of these issues, and I think it's time that we join other cities with fluoridation to attend to our public. I'm asking all members present at the City Council to consider the scale of the positive impact that we could have on our community through fluoridation. Thank you all for hearing me today.
Thank you, and I want you to know I agree with you 100%. Thank you.
Thank you.
Keelan, does that complete communications?
It does.
All right, let's go to the consent agenda. Have any items been pulled off of the consent agenda?
We've had no requests to pull items.
Please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
I'm sorry, aye.
Wheeler.
All right, the consent agenda is adopted. We will move to the first time certain item, please. That's item number 920.
Proclaim the week of November 30, 2020 to be Bi-Native Week.
Colleagues, the City of Portland, in partnership with Prosper Portland and the Oregon Native American Chamber, is proud to participate in Bi-Native Week. This week encourages residents to buy from small, local, Native-owned businesses. As we know, Native American Portlanders are pivotal to the fabric of this city and have helped shape Portland's community, culture, and economy. Due to the pandemic, it's important now more than ever to support our local small businesses and especially our Native American-owned businesses. With that, I'd like to introduce Laura John, our Tribal Relations Office Director, who will introduce our invited guest. Director John, please take it away.
Morning, thank you.
Morning.
Morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Laura John. I serve as the city's travel relations director in our Office of Government Relations. I'm so pleased to join you this morning to speak about the city's, to my knowledge, first ever Bi Native Week proclamation. Today you will hear from a number of honored guests. Over the last several weeks, we have worked with the Oregon Native American Chamber to pull this together. Really exciting outcomes that will be shared and talked about by our guest speakers. I would like to give them as much time as possible, so I'll keep my comments brief and would like to begin by introducing Amber Face from the Oregon Native American Chamber.
Thank you, Laura, and good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Portland commissioners. My name is Amber Face. I'm an enrolled citizen of the Coquille Indian Tribe from Southern Coastal Oregon. I provide business development and resource navigation for businesses at the Oregon Native American Chamber. Thank you for the invitation and opportunity to speak with you all today. At ONAC, we're dedicated to working with all members of the community to advance the educational and economic opportunities for Native Americans in Oregon and Southwest Washington. We do this by providing technical assistance and guidance to Native business owners and entrepreneurs. We are pleased to be here today in support of the City of Portland's Bi Native Initiative. The Bi Native movement has deep roots in tribal nations in the Northwest. Elected tribal leaders, policy leaders, and scholars from the area have created policies by and for tribal people focused on wealth creation and dollar multiplicity in our Native communities. For small businesses across America and in Indian country to thrive, the environment and culture that they exist in must encourage their success. When local governments and the community promote consumer spending at local businesses, it keeps entrepreneur-driven economies alive. By supporting the Bi Native movement, you're enhancing local democracy. As tribal citizen-owned businesses with roots in the community, our business networks are involved in the development of key policies that shape the lives of our families and communities. This directly contributes to the protection of our land and environment, and that benefits all of Portland as an economic hub for the state and region. As we look ahead towards bridging wealth and income divides that have plagued our communities since the Donation Land Claims Act in Oregon, know that ONAC is here as a resource for both our community and city government alike. It will take intentional partnerships between government and community-based organizations like ONAC to right these historical wrongs and realize our collective goals of developing a truly inclusive democracy. And as we hold up the words of Mayor Wheeler from his holiday address and this year's proclamation, we applaud the honoring of tribal sovereignty, treaty and trust responsibility, and the continued right to govern, live, and do business on Indian land. Now is the time to move this important proclamation towards policy to ensure that our Native community embedded businesses continue to grow and thrive in Portland. Please allow me to introduce three entrepreneurs from our ONAC community as they share the importance of having the City of Portland remain committed to supporting Native-owned businesses through policy, investment, and resources. We are joined by Dr. Eric Brote of GNU, the only Native American-owned denim brand, which is owned and operated by the husband and wife team, Eric and Amanda. They're from Wisconsin and live here in Portland, Oregon. We're also joined by Palani Bearghost of No End of Designs, a unique apparel company which specializes in androgynous, multifunctional, and one-of-a-kind pieces that range from activewear, lifestyle, and couture. And finally, Rebecca Smith, owner and flavor concoctor at Ice Queen PDX, which specializes in plant-based frozen desserts. Eric, if you wanted to start.
Thanks. Well, good morning.
Morning.
Wheeler and Laura John and City Council. Thanks for having us on here this morning. My name is Eric Brote. I'm Ojibwe from Minnesota. And my wife and I, we moved here back in 2015 because of the opportunities that exist here in Portland. I know that you guys may receive a number of criticisms for what is going on here. However, I just want to echo that we choose to live here and we love living here in Portland. And in fact, it was the economic opportunities that we saw when choosing a city. When we came and actually went to the ONAC Gala that sealed the deal for us to relocate from Texas and Wisconsin to Portland back in 2015. As Amber mentioned, I'm one of the co-owners of GNU. I'm the COO of GNU, which is the only Native American-owned denim brand in the world. I own it with my wife. I'm Ojibwe from Minnesota. She is Stockbridge, Muncie, and Oneida from Wisconsin. And it's the unique opportunities, the creative culture that is here, as well as a little bit of occasional magic that has allowed us to be able to know that this is the right place for us to be and exist. The ability for us to live in a community where we are visible at some extent as people is what really drove us to want to move and relocate here to Portland, where we have other people who own and operate businesses, be it other apparel companies, be it food and beverage, be it folks that are our neighbors who are Indigenous and having coffee shops and apothecaries, even in our neighborhood that are Indigenous owned. It's one of the things that makes us feel more included and more welcomed here. And just one other thing I want to mention too, is that we come here as kind of like a couple duo. We also built the only center in the country that trains American Indians to become doctors. And so it's the only HRSA-funded center of excellence for American and Alaska Natives, and it's here in Portland. Right now we're training 44 American Indians to become doctors. And when we invite people to try and encourage them to come and move to Portland, when they can see that there's a way to get involved in community by going out and being visible in the community, by being able to invest in Indigenous-owned businesses and to be part of something like ONAC, it makes a big difference in us being able to recruit those kind of folks to town. And the last thing I just want to kind of end with is, you know, we're all cheering for you guys. Whether or not we all see eye to eye on everything, that may be, I don't know exactly where you guys stand on everything, but we want you to succeed and we need you to succeed. And as we move forward in this moment where the people of Portland have chosen all of you to help us imagine and accelerate possibilities for more people in Portland, you know, we need you to look at what has worked and to do more of what has worked and possibly do less of what hasn't, and to lean in and to boldly reimagine how we might be able to do some new things together that could set the tone, not only for Portland, but for the country, in how to really actualize a new way of doing business and doing things that are equitable and inclusive for all of us to be able to succeed in this realm. I'll cede the rest of my time. Thank you for allowing me to be here with you guys this morning.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. Laura, does that complete your presentation?
Amber is introducing the guest speaker, so I'll wait for her.
I'm sorry, Amber. Are you?
So, Kalani, would you mind joining us next?
Good morning. Thank you, Council, Commissioner Hardestine, Commissioner Ryan, Mayor Whittler. Thank you, Amber, with ONAC Prosper Portland, for having me here today. Eminyachi Api Polani Bergost. I'm an enrolled member of the three affiliated tribes out of Fort Berthold, North Dakota, Mandan, Hadatsa, and Arikara. I'm the CEO and founder of No End of Designs. I started No End of Designs in 2013. I am a Portland native, so I wanted to create a business that didn't exist. And I created a neo-contemporary traditional Indigenous design streetwear clothing company. And it's Native designed, created for all. NEO works towards building our Native economies by supporting our Native communities, our Native artisans, designers, entrepreneurs, and makers, also working with other Native nonprofits and organizations to be able to build, connect, and provide, whether that's PPE gear or working together to raise funds, medical kits, food, and clean water and other things for our people to be able to not only survive but thrive. I think it's important to amplify and support Indigenous small-owned businesses to preserve our integrity of our art, our culture, and our brands that we love and that we have worked so hard to build and to grow, and also to be the hope for our future generations and to be able to be those trailblazers to know that this is possible. I would like to thank Oregon Native American Chamber and Prosper Portland for their commitment to empower their business leaders, to provide resources, to provide connections in terms of educational workshops, also connecting us with other like-minded entrepreneurs like GNU and other Native American businesses, because we work together to build our communities, to build our Native economies, to come together collectively for a bigger purpose other than ourselves. It's bigger than that. Also, I look forward to further working with ONAC and Prosper Portland into the near future. And I wanna thank all the work that you guys are doing. And like Eric said, to reemphasize, we can beg to differ on different things, but agree, and also on some aspects of what you're doing, and hope that you continue to provide resources for our small businesses and give us the opportunity to be able to work back within our own communities collectively and for our future generations to come. So thank you for having me today, and thank you for this opportunity, and I wish you guys a blessed rest of your guys' day.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Palani. And finally, we have Rebecca Smith.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I am Rebecca Smith, an enrolled member of the Muscogee Creek Nation, PSU alumni of the Indigenous Nation Studies Program, and owner of Ice Queen, the country's first vegan popsicle shop. And I wanted to start by thanking everyone for joining us today as we acknowledge and uplift the Native business in Portland. I officially started Ice Queen 2 years ago, and since then, the business has grown from a pop-up, a wholesale, and finally to a brick-and-mortar storefront in such a brief amount of time. I can attribute a large portion of Ice Queen's success to those who have lent me a hand along the way. I have personally benefited from the Inclusive Business Resource Network supported programs such as Mercy Corps, NEA, and Mercatus. It has been the support of these programs that has allowed me to show my true potential. I have experienced many adversities in my life, and finding my path forward has not always been easy. Being Native has brought hardship to my life through intergenerational trauma, but it has also brought me perseverance, resiliency, and fearlessness through lived experience. Through many of the Native culturally specific programs, I have been able to gain some of what has been taken from me. Being surrounded by other Native entrepreneurs, receiving business guidance from advisors with Native-driven values has enabled me to gain business knowledge, yes. But more importantly, I have also gained a sense of who I am. While Native people are not a monolith, there are some commonalities that link us together. And the biggest one I can see is the significance and reliance of our community. I have found and built relationships in the Native community here in Portland. I have never experienced connection like this in my life, as my family has primarily existed as urban Natives. Continued support for Buy Native policies, investments, and resources through Native-centered programs allow me and others like me to continue to feel like we have a home in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amber, was that the last speaker? Just wanted to check. Okay, thank you. Just a few words before we close the presentation portion of the proclamation today. I wanted to share some updates with the council members and with you, Mayor Wheeler, to let you know that a number of Native businesses have been supported by the COVID-19 relief funds that went to small business owners through Prosper. And other Native businesses also benefited from the assistance with water utilities that the city has provided for small business owners during this time. So we are taking steps within the city to continue to support Native businesses. This is another step. Mercatus has this year put together a Buy Native guide, which is available on their website. And I'll make sure that each of the council members get that link to view the businesses and also to share out. I also wanted to let you know that as part of my work in the Office of Government Relations, I will be reaching out to tribes that we have interacted with in the past to ask them if they would like any of their tribally owned businesses to be listed in this guide, so that we're including that representation as well. And then just finally wanted to thank you all for this proclamation, to thank the business owners. Native owned businesses are unfortunately right now few and far between. And so these stellar individuals that you see here are really pushing back against the system that intended for us to not have businesses in the mainstream. So really honored guests. By doing this proclamation, the city of Portland is expressing their support and hopefully encouraging other Native entrepreneurs out there to step up and take that risk and work with ONAC to start their own business. Thank you.
Thank you. And before I read the proclamation, thank you for that, Director John. And before I read the proclamation, I'll ask my colleagues if any of them have any remarks they'd like to make before we read the proclamation. Very good. I will go ahead and read the proclamation. Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for that inspirational, I am unmuted. Thank you for that inspirational way to start the meeting. I really appreciate it. Director John, we've been seeing a lot of you through the month of November. I know why. I just hope that it becomes a habit throughout the year. And it's really nice to meet you amber-faced and hear more about ONAC. And the fact that you brought together this panel was really inspiring. So that's what made me want to say something. I appreciate this proclamation. There's so much we can do as a city to support the sovereignty, the dignity, and the prosperity of the Native community. And I really can't think of anything better to demonstrate that right now than focusing on Native-owned businesses this week and, of course, year-round. We all know from an economic standpoint that small businesses are just really in a tender place, and we have to do all we can to take care of one another locally in general, but it's really nice to specifically call this out. Anyway, it is, as you said, I think, Amber, it's the right way to right some historic wrongs. So I appreciate all of you. I will remember this presentation, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Fritz.
Good morning. Thank you for honoring us with your presence, and thank you. We recognize that we are guests on the lands that your ancestors have been here for time since time immemorial, and we are grateful that you have blessed us with your presence this morning. Thanks. It was also really very inspiring to hear about your businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Director John. As always, you bring the most inspirational presentations to the City Council. I am so thrilled. I want some ice cream bad now, by the way, Rebecca. I just want you to know that. But I was so thrilled to hear about both the artistic activities of businesses. I was really excited to hear about the 40 doctors in training. I don't think we know enough about how we can be supportive what we know is that healthcare is another one of those industries that the outcomes for Black, Indigenous, and other people of color are pretty outrageous. So the more of us we can have becoming doctors and nurses and being part of the healthcare system, the better the outcomes will be. You have actually inspired me this morning. So I appreciate each and every one of you for being here and choosing Portland as your home. You could live anywhere on the planet, but you chose to be here. Thank you so much. I'll just leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. And then with that, I will read the proclamation. Whereas the City of Portland recognizes that the Indigenous people of the lands that would later become known as the Americas have occupied these lands since time immemorial. And whereas Portland and the surrounding regions have dynamic small business communities that contribute to the vitality and economic prosperity of the Pacific Northwest. Whereas, now more than ever, it's vital to support local businesses and to shop safely during the COVID-19 pandemic. And whereas, Native American-owned businesses help preserve the uniqueness of communities and give a sense of place. And whereas, Native American-owned businesses give back to the community in a multitude of different ways, including goods, services, time, and talent. And whereas, the City of Portland affirms the importance of economic sovereignty by spending at local Native American-owned businesses. And whereas, the City of Portland, in partnership with Prosper Portland and the Oregon Native American Chamber, is proud to support and celebrate Bi Native Week to support a vibrant private sector utilizing the multiplier effect created by shopping at local Native American businesses, which helps build cultural, social, and economic opportunity and prosperity for local organizations and tribal citizens. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim the week of November 30th, 2020, to be Bi Native Week in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day. Thank you all so much for your presentation today. We appreciate it. We wish you the very best. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have our next time certain at 10:15. We'll take a 2-minute recess and then we'll be back in business at 10:15. All right. We are back in action here. Next item is item 921, time certain at 10:15.
Amend the Portland Parks and Recreation Board to clarify purpose, definitions, membership, and update administrative functions.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. In October 2001, Council passed an ordinance establishing the Portland Parks and Recreation Board and created City Code Chapter 3.27. I believe this was under Commissioner Jim Francisconi. It was updated once in June of 2011 under Commissioner Fish. The board is an advisory body made up of Portland community members appointed by the mayor to advise Portland Parks and Recreation and the Council on Regional Parks and Recreation. Here to present is Director, Parks Director Adina Long.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners Fritz, Ryan, and Hardesty. I'm Adina Long, Director of Portland Parks and Recreation. As Commissioner Fritz had mentioned, in 2001, the Portland Parks and Recreation Board was created by Council and City Code Chapter 3.27 was established. This morning, we bring changes to this chapter that have been proposed by the board. With the passage of resolution number 37328 in November 2017, the Office of Community and Civic Life created a bylaw template for city advisory bodies to utilize. With Civic Life's recommendation and city attorney guidance, the board worked to update their bylaws to bring them in alignment with the template, clarify their purpose, definitions, and membership, and update some administrative functions. Because the board code contains details regarding how the board is to conduct its work, there are some proposed modifications to the code which require your consideration and approval. Joining us today is our board chair, Paul Grimes, and vice chair, Bonnie Yosick. Paul will now share some more about the board's updates to City Code Chapter 3.27. Paul?
Thank you, Adina, and good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I'm the chair, Paula Grimes, and Bonnie Giosic is with us as well this morning. We just want to highlight eight changes to the chapter for your consideration today. And that begins with section 10, which is the purpose. There's been a clause added that this purpose for the board includes other strategic initiatives adopted by City Council and the key lens that we're using of diversity, equity, and inclusion at the forefront of all the discussions about parks and recreation services for the city of Portland. Moving to section 20, definitions, we've added B, board years defined now to be consistent with the fiscal year for the city of Portland. And also in this section of definitions, we've added item G, which is a clarification that the Parks 2020 vision means Parks 2020 vision adopted on the 10th of October, 2001. And then in terms of section 30 regarding voting and language, we've edited part A to use numerical figures rather than words for the terms for the board members. We've also added language clarifying the consecutive number of years that a person can serve on the template, not to exceed 6 years of total consecutive service, provided that a member appointed initially to a term of less than 3 years may thereafter be reappointed to two consecutive three-year terms, and completion of an unexpired term shall not reapply for the six-year cumulative limitation. Then we've added another piece regarding on the template. The board changed eligibility for reappointment of members who have completed two consecutive terms from after 1 year to after 3 years. We've made it clear in terms of ex officio members of the board that we had no explicit limit, and that now it is clarified that there'll be no more than four ex officio members of the Portland Parks Board. And lastly, we've changed the terms for the chair and other officers to be 2 year terms. So those are the changes for your consideration today. We're happy to address your questions if you have any. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Very good. Thank you. Colleagues, any questions at this point? Very good. Is there any, Commissioner Hardesty had a question. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your presentation. Director Long, I guess this question is more to you. What is the overlap between the PROX Budget Advisory Committee and the PROX Foundation Board?
Thank you for that. Actually, the Parks Foundation Board is different than the Portland Parks Board. So there's actually three different entities. Nope, you're good. But I think I knew what your question really was. There's actually currently six Parks Board members that serve on the Budget Advisory Committee. The rest of the members that make up the Budget Advisory Committee are labor and other community members.
Thank you for that clarification, because I think the last time we had a budget presentation, it was really unclear to me about what the overlap would be. And do all the park boards have overlap onto the Budget Advisory Committee? Like the foundation, are they represented as well?
Yes, actually the executive director of the Portland Parks Foundation also serves on the Budget Advisory Committee as well as the Parks Board. And we also have a Parks Board member who serves on the Parks Foundation Board. So there's a little bit of overlap just so that we can continue to coordinate our work together.
Thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions? Keelan, is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up for this item.
Very good. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading.
Mayor, excuse me.
Fritz. Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. While you're here, I just wanted to thank Paul Egremis and Bonnie G. Yosik for your service on the Parks Board. Over the 6 years that I've been the Parks Commissioner, I really have appreciated the input of the board. You've worked really hard to have equity be the foundation of all of the work that you do, and to recruit members who represent the full range of Portlanders. And so I know you put in a lot of time and effort, and I just wanted to thank you while you're here. And thank you for these code changes. They do make a difference, as you know.
You're welcome.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Thank you all. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading, which gets us to our third time certain item, which is item number 922.
Authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process pursuant to Oregon Revised Statutes Chapter 279C and City Code Chapter 5.34 for construction of certain right-of-way surface stormwater facilities funded by Percent for Green.
Commissioner Fritz.
Excuse me, Mayor, we're a minute early.
I'm sorry?
We're 1 minute early as per my clock.
All right, tell us a 1 minute long joke.
I'm not the one.
and me without my ukulele, where's John? How's the weather outside there, Commissioner Hardesty?
I have sun at the moment.
Not interested anymore. It's 10:25.
You'll pay for that one, Mayor.
No doubt. In spades. Commissioner Fritz, you're muted.
Yeah, I know. Despite your stalling for a minute, I still can't find my talking points, so I'm just going to send it over to staff.
No worries.
Did you say you're just turning it over, Commissioner Fritz?
I did. Yeah, okay. I'm sure I have some lovely speech that's all prepared for me, but in the moment, I can't find it. Sorry. Right.
Okay, well, that's totally fine.
If anybody's watching this today, we did not rehearse this. I want everybody to know this is completely spontaneous. Take it away.
I've rehearsed, so hopefully it
thank God
for everyone else. So I will say first that I'm going to be speaking about two ordinances today, and I'm not very good with the numbers. I think it's
Ivy, could you introduce yourself just for the record?
Oh, yeah. So I'm Ivy Dunlap. I work at BES, and I also have with me today Adrian Iona, also from BES. And
I am.
And Ivy, that is the Bureau of Environmental Services, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Just checking. I'm sure some of the public might wonder what we're talking about.
Thank you. Thank you. I am a landscape architect by training, and I also manage the Percent for Green program that we're here to talk about today. And Adrian Iona is my manager, and we both work on the codes, rules, and manuals team at Environmental Services. And I will be talking about two ordinances today. One is a renewal of, which is the one that was read by one is to renew and extend the current exemption from competitive bidding. And the second one is to create a new funding mechanism within the existing program that will allow the program to fund projects on private property. So that's a little introduction, but now I'm gonna go back kind of to the beginning of my program, and I will share my screen. And does that work, or is it showing that double screen thing?
Nope, it works just fine.
Okay. So as I said, we are here from Bureau of Environmental Services, and I am here to talk about two different ordinances today. To support the ongoing work of the Percent for Green program. One ordinance renews the exemption from competitive bidding that we currently work under for the program. And the second ordinance allows the program to enter into grant agreements, opening up funding opportunities for private property. Before I go into detail about the two ordinances, I'm going to give you a little bit of context about the program. I think it will help to understand how we got here with the two ordinances. So Percent for Green is a stormwater grant program supporting BES's mission to manage Portland's stormwater infrastructure and to protect public health and the health of the environment. BES, or Environmental Services, is interested in managing stormwater for a variety of reasons, depending on the stormwater system and the location. Green streets and other natural stormwater solutions can help meet these goals. So green streets are vegetated stormwater facilities in the right-of-way. I know kind of a lot of wonky stormwater talk. So in the combined system, the pink area on the map, the goal is to keep stormwater out of pipes and to protect capacity to prevent combined sewer overflows and basement sewer backups. In the separated stormwater system, the green areas on the map, the goal is to prevent flooding and to improve water quality of stormwater before it's discharged to streams and rivers. In the underground injection control area, also known as the UIC or sump areas, the water infiltrates into the ground, recharging groundwater. In these locations, the orange areas on the map, protecting groundwater is the goal. I'm going to talk later in the presentation about the orange areas, and I'll show this map again, just FYI. The Stormwater Management Manual provides the requirements in each of these systems, and you might remember hearing a little bit about this a few weeks ago with the 1738 code update. Adrian presented on that. So the Percent for Green program acts as a grant program that provides funds to green streets and other vegetated or natural stormwater management projects in the right-of-way that are not otherwise required as a condition of development. These are all optional projects. The program funds community and city-initiated projects through an application and review process. The program has two revenue sources. One is are in-lieu fees collected when development can't meet stormwater management requirements. The other is 1% of the construction cost of capital improvement projects in the right-of-way that don't manage stormwater. So an example of where the money comes from are pipe trenching projects and grind and overlay paving projects for that 1% that's collected. The typical income to the program is between $300,000 and $500,000 a year. And over the life of the program, over $6 million have been encumbered to projects. So since 2008, when the program started operating, about 50 projects have been funded. The annual cumulative benefit of the program includes removing 4.7 million gallons of stormwater from the combined system annually and treating over 9 million gallons of water before just discharging to streams and rivers. Cumulatively, the project manages about 15 acres of impervious area. There are basic program requirements to qualify for funding. And the program has additional criteria used to leverage the funding to achieve multiple benefits. These include projects that are community initiated, that have design or policy innovation, that include an education component or are highly visible, that leverage resources and time, materials, and money, that include job training opportunities or DMWESB contracting, and the projects selected don't necessarily have all of these additional criteria, but have some of them in each project. So I'm gonna talk about the ordinances now specifically. The first proposed ordinance renews an exemption from competitive bidding to continue to fund voluntary and community-initiated projects in the right-of-way. This renews the exemption for 5 more years.
Excuse me, Ivory.
Yes.
Before you go too much further, would you go back to the last slide, please?
Yes.
So your request today is to exempt this percent for green from the competitive bidding process. And I see that diversity in contracting is optional.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk a bit about why that's optional rather than in a required component?
Yes. I have a slide specifically on that. I think it's in 3 slides. Do you mind if I wait?
Nope. I don't mind if you're going to answer it. Okay. I will be fine. Thank you.
Yeah. And then if you have more questions, I'm really happy to answer, to get back to that for sure.
Thank you, Ivy.
Sure. So this renews the exemption for 5 more years, and 2 previous ordinances, basically this exact same ordinance, have been used over the last 10 years to operate this part of the program. So just a little bit about this exemption. I'm not a contracting expert, but because these projects result in a city asset, an asset in the right-of-way, they require a construction contract. Because the projects are voluntary, site-specific, and are often connected to an existing development proposal, they don't lend themselves to a typical procurement process, which I think will become more apparent when I talk about them more. And it's also explained in more detail in Exhibit A, which is attached to the ordinance. And these are the findings on the exemption from competitive bidding, the technical part that goes with asking for this exemption. So 17 out of 50 of the Percent for Green projects have used this exemption for competitive bidding. There are 3 typical situations for using this contracting method. So it's not the whole program, but a select set of the projects use this mechanism. It's used for projects initiated by community partners. For example, the program funded the stormwater facilities and pervious paving for the entrance road to Colley Park. This was a partnership with Verde. Other community partners have been Green Lens, June Key Delta Community Center, and the Swan Island TMA, Transit Management Association, Swan Island Transit Management Association. It is also used for projects initiated by neighbors and executed through neighborhood coalition offices. For example, a pedestrian connection from the Sabin neighborhood to Irving Park that also helped prevent street flooding along Northeast Fremont. And you can see a picture of that project in the bottom right-hand corner. The third common partnership is when an affordable housing development is not required to manage stormwater from the right-of-way, but BES has a system need at that location. The stormwater facility is added to an existing project. The slide on the top right-hand corner shows a partnership with Transition Projects at the new low-income single adult housing project. I say LISA, I don't know if that is technically what other people say. And this project is on North Argyle. So you might have heard about it recently. And REACH is another project that we've done this sort of optional stormwater improvements to the right of way. Okay, so I am going to, let's see here. So currently applicants are encouraged but not required to use DMWESB contractors. However, in some cases, the exemption from competitive bidding has allowed greater flexibility to use DMWESB contractors because the project isn't required to choose the lowest bid. For example, the Colley Park entrance road that I just mentioned, chose to contract with contractors in their neighborhood that would support the immediate community and BIPOC contractors. Of the 17 projects that have used the exemption from competitive bidding, two projects, the Colley Park entrance and the June Key Delta Center, had 100% DMWESB contractor participation for their full projects. Nine projects had partial participation. These projects had existing construction contractors identified by a low bid or some other sort of contractor requirement for the project and didn't have flexibility to change the contractor for this small portion of the overall project. So for example, on these housing projects, Percent for Green might fund $100,000 and Green Streets in addition to a multi-million dollar large housing projects. So the DMWESB participation for these projects is about 20% for the overall project. Six projects didn't have any DMWESB participation, and two of these six projects were only for materials and volunteer labor. We're excited about the opportunity to add more DMWESB contracting requirements for the program with the proposed changes. There is this balance. The exemption from competitive bidding does allow more flexibility for applicants to use that criteria to a higher standard. However, for these add-on projects, for the housing add-on projects, if we had a high, you know, let's say 100% DMWESB requirement, we would lose the applicants and that project because we don't have enough leverage with this larger project to require DMWESB. Do you want to ask any more questions about that now, or come back to it, Commissioner Hardesty?
Commissioner Hardesty has her hand raised, so why don't we go ahead?
Okay.
Thank you, Ivy. Do you have the breakdown? I know Juneteenth and I know Verde. So I know immediately what the ethnic and minority breakdown was for those two. Mm-hmm. But the 20% that you talked about, what was the breakdown for that?
You know, I don't have the breakdown.
The demographic, it's really important when you come to city council that you bring that, because I will ask that at every presentation. Where
yeah, I know, and I do, I have that as an as the template. However, some of these projects are over 10 years old and I don't have that kind of breakdown for them. Because at the time, 10 years ago, when the program started, I didn't have that specific criteria to supply it in that way. So what I have for those projects are the reporting that they were required to do for their contracting, I believe, through the Housing Bureau.
Thank you. Maybe I should ask, if you are exempt from a competitive bid process, how are you going to increase the opportunities for women and minority-owned construction firms over this 5 years? What's the plan?
Okay. So, the plan is to work really closely with figuring out the criteria with working with community organizations that we're going to partner with for figuring out this balance between requiring the DMWESB and how to leverage projects and make sure they're implementable. I would also say we have worked, I've talked with the PCEF, Portland Community Energy Fund, and discussed with them and also gleaned through all of their meeting notes ways that they are working to promote DMWESB. So we will be using some of their approaches as a model. And I would like to figure out a way with our contracts to write it in as a requirement. This exemption and also the grant contracts that I will talk about next do have more flexibility than a typical low bid project.
Let me just say that I am reluctant to support an exemption from competitive bid without a clear plan on how we're going to increase the number of women and people of color contractors. I think since this program started, the city has been really clear about really prioritizing BIPOC opportunities, as you heard earlier with the Native American Business Week. So I'm very reluctant to support any exemption, especially a five-year exemption, where there's not a plan to be intentional about how we get to better numbers for women contractors and minority-owned contractors. Okay. So thank you.
Sure. Okay, so let's see. Oh, I also wanted to mention that on this last slide that 33 other projects have also been funded through this program, not using the exemption from competitive bidding. 15 of these small projects were constructed by PBOT maintenance operations. Maintenance operations isn't a partner anymore for building these projects because they are so busy with doing corner ramp replacements. Another 18 of the projects had mixed funding sources and were bid and constructed with other improvements, such as along with an LID improvement or another capital project. And in those cases, in these other 33 cases, there's usually an MOU with PBOT, or if BES is doing the bidding as part of another project, there's internal accounting for the expenses. So I'm going to move on now to the second ordinance. The second ordinance allows the program to enter into grant agreements, opening up funding opportunities for private property. So over the last 12 years since the program started, there have been policy changes that have ended up limiting opportunities to use the funding in the right of way. The result is that there's not any opportunities in the UIC or the orange area of the map, and limited opportunities in the pink and the green areas. Given these shifts in the Bureau's policies and priorities, we have looked at the program and been studying it and really think it's time to adapt and evolve the type of projects that the program funds. So this legislation, the grant agreement approach, will adding that funding mechanism to the program, it will help us better respond to community priorities and to increase our priorities for using the Percent for Green funds throughout Portland. Adding a new delivery mechanism to fund projects on private property directly allows Percent for Green to expand the geography to Outer East and North Portland. I have the orange overlay on this slide. These are the dots represent past projects. In the past, we, due to our changing policies over the years, we were able to fund some projects in Outer East Portland, but with our new system needs and policies, that isn't an option any longer. So with this change, Percent for Green will be able to expand program outreach and co-develop projects with new community partners. One, because we won't have the geographic limitation, but also because projects on private property lend themselves to involving volunteers where right-of-way projects don't due to the nature of the work of working in the right-of-way. With this change, we'll be able to fund projects that are a priority for BIPOC communities. The change will also increase opportunities to spend money from primarily green streets to new projects like stormwater retrofits at schools or retrofitting a large parking lot in Outer East Portland. Because these projects are not otherwise required by federal, state, or local regulations, they are strictly voluntary. It's unlikely that the projects would happen without a private-public partnership. So in summary, the exemption from competitive bidding will continue to allow Percent for Green to capture system benefits not otherwise required in the right-of-way and leverage opportunities by adding on to existing projects and enjoy the multiple benefits of these projects, these green projects in the right-of-way. The new funding mechanism for private property will open up the program opportunities citywide and be able to support more community-initiated projects. So with that, I think I'll stop sharing my screen. I can always go back if I need to. And I'm happy to take any additional questions. And
before we call for additional questions there, Ivy, there's an oversight here. Could we also, Keelan, read item 923? That's the para that goes with this.
authorize intergovernmental agreements and grant agreements in support of the Percent for Green program for 5 years beginning FY 2020-21, not to exceed $3 million.
Thanks. That's just the companion to this. Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Hardesty, you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Ivy. On your next to last slide, you had a bullet point about the opportunity to spend more money or to spend money. And I just think as a public document, it might be a better way to phrase that statement. When you explained it, it made sense to me. But when I saw the slide, I could just imagine a member of the public that didn't have the benefit of your fabulous presentation, looking at that and just affirming for them, see, we just want to spend money, right? Uh-huh. So maybe there's a better way to word that so that the permanent record reflects what we want to do as compared to that statement. It stuck out for me.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Do you want me to expand on it just a little bit right now?
No, your explanation was very good, but I just know at some point this goes into a file somewhere and somebody will pull it up one day and say, oh, well, the goal was really just to spend more money. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's the goal at all.
Right. Thank you. That's a great point.
Very good. Any further questions? Commissioner Fritz.
Yeah, well, that's on me because actually we did practice this and I didn't notice that. So thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing that to our attention.
Very good. Keelan, any public testimony on 922 or 923?
Yes, we had one person sign up, Ted Labby.
Great. Go ahead, Ted.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Udaly, Fritz, Hardesty, and Ryan. Thanks for the opportunity to provide comments. I am here today on behalf of DPAVE and the Urban Green Spaces Institute. I'm also a departing member of the Portland Utility Board, but today I'm here representing myself. Urban Green Space Institute advocates for policies and investments in urban green spaces across the region, and DPAVE builds green spaces through community-driven projects. Both organizations work to reclaim urban spaces for nature to address the climate crisis, redress social and environmental injustices, and create healthy, connected, and resilient communities. Renewing and expanding the eligibility for the Percent for Green funds will help support important community partners like DPAVE, who are working closely with the city and the community. We support the proposed reform to enable grant funds to support projects on private property and expand the program reach to parts of North and East Portland that were previously ineligible. This change will enable groups like DPAVE to spearhead larger projects that take more time and coordination with the city and stakeholders. And it will address inequities in access to Percent for Green monies. I want to point out that these proposed changes are also consistent with the city's 2019 Climate Emergency Declaration, which envisions a citywide green infrastructure strategy with the goals of achieving a healthy, connected city for all, maximizing benefits of green infrastructure investments, building on connecting, enhancing our existing green infrastructure networks, and linking in with business and nonprofit action. We've been pushing for 10 years for this. So it's nice to finally see it make it into the Climate Emergency Declaration last year. We're excited and eager to dig into that work with you and look forward to working closely with the four bureaus, BES, Parks, and PBOT on it. I just have one more quick thing to say. I provided a letter, and I don't know if it's made it to your desks yet, that goes a little bit more detail about how we do our work and why this change that Ivy's proposing, the BES is proposing, makes so much sense. These community partnerships looked at from a very narrow cost-benefit perspective enable partners like DPAVE to do so much more with limited dollars and leverage those resources. And the comparison I offer is over the last 12 years, BES has done 50 projects and annually manages about 14.5 million gallons of stormwater off those projects to a tune of $4.7 million. Meanwhile, DPAVE, over that same period, 2008 to 2020, has done about 68 projects, most of them in Portland. We manage 19.5 million gallons of stormwater per year. And we've built those projects to the tune of $1.8 million. So we're effectively getting one third greater environmental benefit at about 40% of the cost of the BES Percent for Green program. And I think that's a pretty remarkable record. I know I'm out of time, but I just wanted to blow our own horn and say, we look forward to working on BES 1% for Green this next year in partnership with the city. And we very much support these reforms that are before you today. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, any further comments or questions before we move these to second reading? Very good, great presentation. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Item 922 is a non-emergency ordinance, first reading, moving to second reading, and 923 is also a first reading of the non-emergency ordinance. It also moves to second reading. Thanks, everybody. We'll now move to the regular agenda. First item is item 932.
Proclaim results of the municipal nonpartisan general election on measure 26-213, restore recreation programs, parks, nature, water through 5-year levy.
Colleagues, this proclamation enacts and puts into effect voter approved measure 26-213 for Portland Parks and Recreation. This was the levy. Commissioner Fritz, as the commissioner in charge, would you like to make a few remarks before I read the proclamation?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I am really grateful to the voters of Portland for approving this levy. It's going to make a huge difference to our park system. I'm also very grateful to Mayor Wheeler for his leadership of the Bureau for much of the year, and of course to our dear friend Commissioner Fish for putting the issue front and center and getting this to the voters. So just thanks to everybody all around. I'm very grateful.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Anybody else want to chime in before I read the proclamation? Very good. Whereas as the municipal nonpartisan general election held on November 3rd, 2020, a measure proposed to voters by City Council referral with the ballot title caption, Restore Recreation Programs, Parks, Nature, Water through 5-year levy, and such measure was designated on the ballot as measure 26213. And according to the official canvas, 235,715 votes were cast in favor of said measure, and 132,958 were cast against said measure. Now, therefore, it is hereby proclaimed by the undersigned mayor of the city of Portland that the measure with the ballot title caption Restore Recreation Programs, Parks, Nature, Water through 5-year levy has been enacted and is in effect. Dated at Portland, Oregon, the second day of December 2020. Ted Wheeler, Mayor, the City of Portland. Thank you. Next item is 933.
Proclaim results of the municipal nonpartisan general election on measure 26-217. Amends charter, authorizes new independent community police oversight board.
Colleagues, this proclamation enacts and puts into effect voter approved measure 26-217 to authorize a new independent community police oversight board. Commissioner Hardesty, would you like to make any remarks on this?
Yes, Mayor. First, I just want to say thank you to the Portland City Council, all members who supported sending this to the voters. And I also want to give a real appreciation to the over 80% of voters who thought that this measure was absolutely the right measure at the right time. Thank you all, and I look forward to us continuing to work to put this commission in place as per the voters' wishes. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Anybody else want to chime in? Very good. Whereas at the municipal nonpartisan general election held on November 3rd, 2020, a measure proposed to voters by City Council referral with ballot title caption, amends charter, authorizes new independent community police oversight board. And such measure was designated on the ballot as measure 26217. And according to the official canvas, 301,527 votes were cast in favor of said measure, and 68,088 votes were cast against said measure. Now, therefore, it is hereby proclaimed by the undersigned mayor of the city of Portland that the measure with the ballot title caption amends charter, authorizes new independent community police oversight board has been enacted and is in effect. Dated at Portland, Oregon, the second day of December 2020, Ted Wheeler, mayor of Portland. Thank you everybody for that. Next up is 934.
Authorize city attorney to appeal final judgment in Pennoyer Law Office LLC and Michael and Wise and Associates versus State of Oregon, XREL, Department of Transportation and City of Portland, Multnomah County, Circuit Court Case Number 18CV52454.
Colleagues, the purpose of this resolution is to authorize the city attorney to appeal an adverse judgment in this case. The case is somewhat complicated. It concerns an attorney lien dispute that ended up involving the city as well as the state. Plaintiffs Dave Pennoyer and Michael Wise are two attorneys who represented a couple, Colin Christopher and Emily Furstenau, who were involved in an auto accident at an intersection maintained by both the city and the state. On appeal, Mr. Christopher and Ms. Furstenau were represented by attorneys from the firm of Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. While the case was on appeal, the city and the state settled the case with the couple at appellate mediation. But following that mediation, Mr. Pennoyer and Mr. Wise asserted that Mr. Christopher and Ms. Furstenau had never terminated their representation agreement and that Schwabe had concealed the settlement from them. They asserted an attorney lien on plaintiff's settlement funds and demanded 40% of them from Schwabe. Schwabe refused to pay. So Mr. Pennoyer and Mr. Wise brought a lawsuit against the city and the state. The city and the state tendered the defense of the case to Schwabe. Unfortunately, the court ultimately ruled against the city and the state and held that Mr. Pennoyer and Mr. Wise could recoup their attorney lien from the city and the state. Mr. Pennoyer and Mr. Wise then brought an attorney fee petition that is currently under consideration by the court. The city and the state have both decided independently to appeal the case with their respective in-house attorney's offices. The city attorney wishes to challenge the court's ruling on the May 13th, 2020 motions on the grounds that the court's decision misapplied the relevant attorney lien statutes. There are two reasons why the city attorney's office wishes to appeal the court's decision in this case. First, the court's decision may complicate future settlements by the city. Second, the appeal would preserve the city's right to challenge the court decision underlying that fee award. There you have it. And I don't know if we have somebody from the attorney's office on board who would like to provide additional insights.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and City Commissioners. I'm Dan Simon from the City Attorney's Office, here to provide any more information that the council may request and answer any questions regarding this case. As Mayor Wheeler just read, this is a pretty complicated case. It has a history going back to an auto accident case. The accident occurred in 2016. The city settled that case in 2018, We then received the demand from the attorneys who previously represented the settling couple in that case. And the dispute has been through litigation, and the litigation itself was delayed several times due to COVID-19 and other factors. But ultimately, what we've brought for you today is a request to authorize the appeal of this case. It's a case that turns on a seldom seen statute in Oregon. We respectfully disagreed with the court's ultimate opinion in this case. We were represented previously by outside counsel who had been hired at Schwabe's expense to defend the case, and we've since decided to take the appeal in-house. And we are wishing to challenge the judge's ruling on the statute that says that if the attorneys couldn't get their lien recouped from the other attorneys who were representing this former couple, that they could then turn around and sue the other settling parties, namely the city and state.
All right, good. Any questions? Any public testimony? This is a resolution.
No one signed up for this item.
Very good. Call the roll.
Fritz.
Commissioner, you're muted.
I know. Sorry. Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Good job, Mayor. You did a very complicated presentation and made it sound like it was not as complicated as it really is. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Good writers always make me look good, Commissioner. Aye. The resolution is adopted. Thanks to everybody on the legal team for your hard work on this. Next item, 935, please.
Authorized contract with Siemens Industry, Inc. for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Main Substation Equipment for an amount of $4,030,091.
Colleagues, the procurement report is for the purchase of new electrical substation equipment at the Bureau of Environmental Services Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. I can see that we have Scott Schneider here from the Procurement Services Office to present the report. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott Schneider from Procurement Services. This item contains the Chief Procurement Officer's report recommending the award of a contract to Siemens Industry, Inc. for electrical substation equipment. On March 5th of this year, Procurement Services advertised an invitation to bid number 1347 for substation equipment, and on April 14th, two bids were received. On May 5th, the city issued a notice of intent to award the contract to Siemens Industry, Inc., and no protests were received. Siemens has a current City of Portland business tax account and is in compliance with the city's contracting requirements. There are no subcontractors on this contract, and the Bureau's confidence level in this procurement is high. If the council has any questions regarding the solicitation process, I'm happy to answer those. We also have representatives from the Bureau of Environmental Services in council today to address any project-related questions.
Thanks, Scott. Any questions of Scott? If not, I'll entertain a motion. This is a report.
I move adoption.
Move to accept the report.
We'll let
second.
Commissioner Hardesty has moved. Commissioner Fritz is seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll, Keelan.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The report's approved. 936, please.
Authorize water revenue bonds to finance water system capital improvements in an amount not to exceed $142 million and refund water revenue bonds.
Colleagues, this legislation authorizes the issuance of bonds secured by the net revenues of the city's water system that's sufficient to provide net proceeds of up to $140.2 million to finance additions and improvements to the water system and amounts that are reasonably required to finance bond reserves as well as issuance costs. The system improvements to be financed with the new money bonds include additions, improvements, and capital equipment that facilitate the supply, treatment, transmission, storage, pumping, distribution, regulatory compliance, customer service, and support. Matt Gerock is here to present and answer any questions you may have. Hi, Matt.
Morning. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. For the record, I'm Matt Gerock, debt manager within the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. I'm also joined by Elliot Weisick from the Portland Water Bureau. This ordinance authorizes the city to issue up to $142 million of water system revenue bonds to finance various projects under the Portland Water Bureau's capital improvement plan. The borrowing authorization is expected to cover approximately the next 2 years of capital expenditures that are to be funded by publicly sold water revenue bonds. Of the total borrowing authorization, the Bureau currently anticipates issuing approximately $25 million of revenue bonds this fiscal year to cover certain capital expenditures for the next 12 months. However, given the recent uncertainty around market access in the municipal bond market during COVID-19, the city's debt management division will be assessing the market for opportune conditions to potentially issue a larger amount in order to lock in advantageous long-term interest rates. Based on today's market conditions, the estimated borrowing rate is approximately 3% for the 25-year borrowing, though this will vary depending on market events that occur between now and the bond sale date. Additionally, this ordinance authorizes the issuance of water revenue refunding bonds for the purposes of attaining debt service savings. The city's 2011 Series A bonds are outstanding in the amount of $63 million and require an above market interest rate of approximately 4.69% and may be refinanced without a prepayment penalty in early 2021. A refinancing of these bonds is estimated to result in annual debt service savings of approximately $840,000 per year through the bond's final maturity in fiscal year 2036. This is equivalent to approximately $11.4 million of present value savings. Over the next few months, the city's debt management division and the Portland Water Bureau will be jointly preparing the documentation and facilitating the bond sale, which is expected to occur in late winter or early spring of 2021. That concludes the overview of the item, and we are happy to answer any questions on the financing.
Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Hardesty, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, Mayor. Thank you. You saw me trying to find my buttons.
Very good.
My question has to do with, there's a big difference between going out for $20 million in bonds and $142 million in bonds, right? How are you going to make the decision, Matt? And when is that decision going to be made to determine what the size of the bond would be that you would go out for?
It's a good question. So typically we will size bond issues based on how quickly we'll spend down the proceeds to fund projects. So there's different ways that you can do that. You can look at it by doing just an annual issuance, or what's more conventional is the issue for 2 years of capital expenditures. This will cover this, the $25 million is just for the 12 months, but given the way that the market is now, you look at whether or not you'd be better off taking additional risk of waiting to borrow the incremental amount for like the second half of the 24-month period. So we would evaluate probably 6 weeks or so before the bond sale. When we approach rating agencies to inform them the structure of the bond issue.
And when do you expect to know if we receive the federal loan that we applied for?
We are still waiting for that. It could be later this year or early next calendar year.
And how will that impact what you do as far as going out for bond?
Based on the, there's multiple projects that are going to be funded, by
both the bonds that we're discussing today versus the loan that you're asking about. So depending on the spend down of each of those projects, that would influence what we actually do. So if there are, and Elliot, feel free to chime in too if I'm saying something incorrect here. But essentially, yeah, just based on what the actual project is. So like the loan is purely for water treatment, but these bond, the bond sale that we're discussing today is going to be for like other projects within the Water Bureau, because it's the loan is legally restricted just to that specific project, essentially. So I think we just have to look at our different options as we get closer to when we actually need to start spending money. Money goes out the door to get the projects completed.
And so I guess prior to the purchase of bonds, there'll be another city council presentation about what you've decided, which direction you're going, and what you've learned from the loan that we're still waiting to find out if that's available. Or are you asking us to just give you permission to go out for $142 million and whatever happens, happens?
I'd like to get the authorization for the $142 million, because that's separate than the loan for that specific project. So under the structure of that loan can only cover up to 50% of the water treatment project. The other 50% needs to be covered by conventional water revenue bonds that are publicly sold that the city traditionally issues, or cash. So there is an advantage to issuing bonds to cover a portion of the total project cost, because the city has to ultimately pay a portion of the cost beyond the loan that we're discussing.
I appreciate that, Matt. But now my understanding is that our estimates could be up to 30% wrong, right? It could be 30% higher. And I don't think there's any chance of it being lower. So if we end up finding out as we move forward that it actually is going to cost us 30% more than we thought it was going to cost, where's the trigger that requires you to come back to the city council for a conversation?
I think that would come through in just in the budget process and the budget formation process for next fiscal year. So I believe that there would be an update on that before moving forward.
Well, I hope if the cost is going to increase more than 20%, that we don't wait to a budget process to find out that is so. So I just want to draw a line that says, I think 20% is reasonable, 21% isn't. And so I just want to make sure that we have an opportunity to weigh in if in fact the cost exceeds 20% over what the estimate already is and as early in the process as possible. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for asking additional questions about the finance. And I realize, Matt, this is a financial presentation, but if I was tuning in, I'd want to know, the question would be, what are we doing with it? What are the capital improvements? If you could just give, Elliot, that might be you. That's why you're here, perhaps. Could you just give us a thumbnail sketch of what those capital improvements are?
Yeah, absolutely. Mayor, commissioners, thank you very much for having us today and the very relevant questions. So the three largest projects associated with this up to $142 million of bond proceeds would be completion of the Washington Park Reservoir. So if you've had a chance to walk up to the park, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to see that tank coming together. I would highly recommend looking down at it. It's a pretty incredible engineering feat. The other non-filtration related project would be the Willamette River pipe crossing. And then as Matt spoke to, there's 51% of the filtration projects that cannot be paid for with that federal loan should we close. So that makes up the remainder of most of the balance. There's also ongoing system improvements, pipe replacement that this would address as well. But if you're, yeah, if you're trying to just get at the quick talking points, those are the three primary projects.
Just what I needed, Elliot. Thank you so much. And more importantly, what, you know, voters and residents might want to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions? Keelan, is there any testimony on this item? Keelan, you're muted.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mayor. What was that?
Is there any further testimony on this item, 936?
No one signed up. Thank you.
All right, good. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Next item is item 937.
Accept an engineering report on a major encroachment into the public right-of-way for the Terwilliger Plaza Skybridge.
Colleagues, Commissioner Udaly is out this morning, so I'm going to read the opening. PBOT's here today to present the engineer's report for the Terwilliger Plaza Skybridge for council approval. Transportation Administrative Rule TRN-8.08 requires City Council to review and approve major encroachment permits in the City of Portland. The Terwilliger Plaza Skybridge will span Southwest 6th Avenue from existing facilities at the Terwilliger Plaza Retirement Community to a yet-to-be-constructed facility across the street. The Skybridge will allow elderly or mobility-compromised residents to safely access services and units across the entire campus. We have PBOT Senior City Planner Bob Haley is with us today for a presentation and can answer any questions that the council may have. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for taking the time to have this project come before you. Tim Herron, Senior Design Planner with Bureau Development Services, is our lead presenter today since he's already done it for the Design Commission. The way the major encroachments work for sky bridges is they're not a land use review. They are their own particular council needing approval for these type of sky structures or major encroachments. And what the process is, we do a utility notice for a month to make sure we're not in conflict with any existing or planned utility improvements in the right of way. And then for above ground encroachments such as sky bridges, they go to the Design Commission, who makes a recommendation to the city engineer, who then brings it to council, which brings us to today for final action and approval, hopefully. And with that, I'll turn it over to Tim Herron to give you a really nice presentation that should hopefully answer most of your questions.
Great, thanks, Bob. Commissioners, Mayor, good to see and hear you all. I've been listening. Commissioner Ryan, good to present before you finally first. Commissioner Fritz, it's great to hear your voice. I haven't been in front of you all in a while. Commissioner Hardesty, pleasure to be in front of you again today. And I'm sorry I got to miss Commissioner Udaly. So I'll move forward. Let me share my screen. I have a 5-minute presentation that will hopefully do just as Bob said. I'll skip over some of the stuff that Bob touched on in my slides just to move it along. And I know Keelan, and it's also good to hear your voice too, Keelan, is going to time me just like I'm going to be timing myself and kind of keep us moving forward. So this is a major encroachment review, Terwilliger Plaza Skybridge. I have about 10 slides I'm going to walk through, and they cover areas of context, which is the location approval criteria. Bob touched on some of that. The Design Commission's role, quick program overview, some precedents, quick proposed Skybridge, and then ultimately the Design Commission's recommendation. So the location of the site is just south of Central City across the 405 on the Southwest Terwilliger Boulevard, kind of entry into the district. At the time this project came in, it was not in a design overlay. However, and the zoning has also changed since. However, the Sky Bridge, as Bob mentioned, is required for review, and Design Commission is the advisory body on that. That's why the project came before them. The zoning map just shows a red circle on where it is located. And then if you could follow my cursor, it's going to go right about here. And this is the block that will be redeveloped as a part of the larger proposal. So approval criteria, Bob mentioned them. Just one note is this is what we call a type 2 sky bridge. It's wider than 14 feet. That note is important because if it was a narrower sky bridge, it would be exempt from this encroachment process. So the fact that it is wider than 14 is why we're here for you today. The Design Commission's role, we are to review the policies, of course, as Bob mentioned with PBOT, form some advice, forward it to the city engineer. City engineer considers those comments and then of course forwards it to you all for a final decision. Program overview, I know the applicant team will follow me, but they will probably touch on some of the other nuances. But the site is steeply graded. They're expanding their facility. The traffic in this immediate area is pretty intense. And so the population of the Tuolumne Plaza are a little more elderly, and there's some mobility issues, and the issue matter of crossing streets is challenging. So we are here for that sky bridge. So within the right-of-way concept or idea, the challenges of them are a rationale. You know, why are you doing the sky bridge? Why is it necessary? It must be critical to the program. Public benefit, this is valued in the areas of architectural excellence, the design of the underside of the bridge, and views down onto the sky bridge from above. We look at transparency, and by that I mean glazing vis-a-vis glass, vis-a-vis clear glass, so that bridge can have a better lightness to it, so when you experience it's not heavy as you walk under it. And then architectural integration. So I'm gonna do three precedents as quick as I can. The Wells Fargo Sky Bridge, the Pioneer Place Mall Sky Bridge, and the most recently, the OHSU Center for Health and Healing Sky Bridge. Wells Fargo Center finished being built in 1972, still the tallest in Oregon. It also is a good example of a wide and heavy sky bridge that is not very transparent. This actually drove a lot of the policies that created the 1982 major encroachment document. I will say, however, it is very nicely architecturally detailed. We learned from that, and in 1990, when the sky bridge for the Pioneer Place Mall came in, it was small, it was light, and it was extremely transparent. And that drove us in our forward thinking as we move forward with any future approved sky bridge like the 2017 OHSU Center for Health and Healing Sky Bridge. If you didn't know or have driven under it or walked through it or perhaps visited the hospital, it is a two-story sky bridge, very transparent and also balanced not only architectural integrity in vis-a-vis and how it was built between the two buildings, but also for patient privacy within. So it was a good discussion in front of the Design Commission, and I personally think it turned out great. So the proposed sky bridge here, this is a plan view and this is a render view, went through a pretty thorough scrutiny by staff and then as presented in front of the Design Commission. And we feel like we checked all the boxes. That is to say, it's very transparent, it's clear glazed. It has solar shading devices, a horizontal green roof on top, so views from above and down onto it are aesthetically pleasing. And the mechanical and the other utilities that run under the bridge between the two structures have been screened. So the experience walking under the bridge should also be pleasing for the pedestrian and the public. So finally, the Design Commission's recommendation was to support the proposal for all the reasons I've stated above. They did, however, have some additional recommendations, which I understand the team has coordinated already into their design, and that included additional design detailing for the underside of the bridge to ensure that experience is seamless and architecturally pleasing. The art panels that are proposed within the bridge are movable as opposed to fixed. And then the other is actually asking that the bridge height be increased at the interior to increase the glazing potential. So that is all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good, colleagues. Any questions? Dan, I see your hand raised, but that may be from last time.
Yes, it is. Sorry about that.
No worries. No worries. Anybody else have any questions at this particular point? Keelan, is there any public testimony on this item?
No, no one signed up.
All right. Very good. This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Mayor?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
The applicant actually has a short presentation for you as well.
Oh, sorry. Very good.
Bob Johnson with Terwilliger Plaza will tell you a little bit about the community at Terwilliger, and then Peter House Connect is going to tell you a little more about the design.
All right. Terrific. Thank you.
Bob, you're on mute.
There we go. A Zoom faux pas. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I am Bob Johnson, President and CEO of Terwilliger Plaza. Thank you for your service to the community, and thank you for considering the plaza's Skybridge design. The plaza is a nonprofit, state-registered continuing care retirement community serving persons 62 years of age and older. The plaza opened in 1962, fulfilling the dreams of members of the Oregon Retired Teachers Association. Originally, the plaza had 342 apartments, mostly studios, with retired single teachers as the majority of the residents. The plaza started as and remains a resident-governed community. That means that a majority of the board of directors must be residents of the plaza. To the best of my knowledge, the plaza is the only resident-governed nonprofit continuing care retirement community in the United States. Over the years, the plaza has grown in size and in programming, adding assisted living and independent living apartments. Programming was expanded with a wellness center, pool, and spa. Today, we serve about 350 residents. Those of you who have been around a while are likely familiar with the Terwilliger Plaza residents, primarily through our Saturday forum. I expect you have been invited to present there in the past when we could meet in person. For those of you who are new, we look forward to a time when we can meet in person again and would be honored to have you speak to our community. At this stage in its life, the plaza again recognizes the need to grow. The Skybridge you are considering will connect the existing campus to a new 10-story, 127-unit independent living apartment building to be known as Parkview at Terwilliger Plaza. The Skybridge will be a vital link that will help unify the plaza campus. Upon completion of Parkview, the plaza will serve almost 600 residents. The average age of new residents entering the plaza is 79. The average age of the current resident population is 84. The plaza development sits on one ownership separated by Southwest 6th Avenue. In order to deliver the services necessary to accommodate residents, the plaza operates as a coordinated campus environment. Amenities will be dispersed throughout the campus by necessity and by intentional programming. The new Parkview building on the east side of 6th will include an auditorium, common rooms of various sizes for socializing and meetings for both large and small groups, including the 50 existing resident committees. There will also be recreational venues in the courtyard and on the roof. Each of these amenities will serve the residents on both sides of 6th Avenue. Likewise, the residents in the new Parkview building will need access to the west side of 6th for recreation, dining, and access to health services. The plaza requires a sky bridge over Southwest 6th Avenue to facilitate the safe and protected movement for the mobility compromised residents, allowing them access to services and apartments on either side of 6th. Residents with compromised mobility or health challenges cannot safely navigate Southwest 6th Avenue, which is already a very busy city street. Also, the hilly terrain makes many of the public sidewalks adjacent to and surrounding the campus too steep to be accessible for many plaza residents. I ask you to support the plaza in this most worthwhile and exciting project. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Appreciate that presentation. I learned something new there as well. Thank you.
Mayor, we do have a presentation from Peter House Connect on more details on the Skybridge. Would you hear more details, or you know, if you feel like staff's presentation was enough?
Well, Peter, you showed up and you've got probably the best background of any of us. So why don't you give us a couple of minutes to let us know what you got?
Okay, I will try to go through this. I'm trying to share my screen here.
You are sharing your screen.
Yeah, it's there.
Okay, can you see it?
Yeah, it looks good.
Okay. So good morning, I'm Peter Hauskenick with LRS Architects, and thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for your time and input today. This is a rendering of the new Parkview building with the sky bridge in the background crossing 6th Avenue as seen from the Carruthers intersection. This is the existing campus of four interconnected buildings with the future Parkview building that's going to go in the foreground. As Tim mentioned, the bridge would connect right across 6th here into an existing elevator lobby of the terrace building. So this is the plan of the existing campus showing a lot of the amenities that are in various locations, which is one reason it's critical to connect all these buildings. So the SkyBridge will functionally integrate the new Parkview building with campus and reinforce Terwilliger as one community that is critical to the residents' well-being. This slide shows the heavy traffic and hilly terrain that's in the area that was just mentioned and their challenges to the residents. This is a photograph of the existing sky bridge, which connects the Heights building here to the terrace building. The new sky bridge would connect at the same level, creating a hub in the center of campus here of what would be a fifth building. So the narrow bridge here creates a lot of restrictions to resident movements, which is why we wound up actually designing for the new building 8-foot wide corridors for the units and then seeking a wider dimension for the bridge itself. This is a floor plan of the bridge. It varies in width due to its constraints connecting to the existing terrace building over here, but opens up on the Parkview building here. It has an average width of 21 feet. It provides for a large volume of residents moving at different paces. We expect the resident population of Parkview to be upwards of 250 people, and there are 350 people on campus. So people will be crossing this bridge daily on a regular basis to get to various amenities that they need. So this also allows residents to rest and socialize. It provides space for ambulatory devices and assistance, and provides space for residents uncomfortable with heights to circulate across the bridge away from the full height windows. Oops. Okay. So the bridge is over 40 feet above grade. The height of the structure of the bridge itself allows us to conceal all the mechanical equipment. We have a green roof for the top of it that allows for additional insulation around the entire bridge and provides space for a three-dimensional ceiling, which I'll show you an image of later with specialty lighting that will be seen from the street as well, adding interest to the bridge. The slope glass glazing and solar shading improve visual connection between the bridge and the street. The sloped underside of the bridge, which is finished in a decorative corrugated metal, will add visual texture and interest to the bridge as well as diffuse traffic noise. So we strove to create a high caliber modern design that's transparent and aesthetically pleasing with a sculptural shape to soften its profile. On the south ends of the bridge, you can see where we put in solar shading that continues across through the lounge of the new Parkview building, thereby really integrating it with that new building. And it's also done to achieve the same sustainable design results as the Parkview building itself, which was submitted for Passive House certification. That is a sustainable design program that reduces energy use by over 50%. On the north side of the bridge, the glazing continues through the building to what will be a central auditorium for the entire campus that's overlooking an exterior courtyard that will have lots of landscaping and a cascading series of stormwater planters that cascade down to the sidewalk itself. This is a image of showing the Parkview building intersection with the bridge, the green roof that will marry up with a green wall of the building itself. This will provide habitat, stormwater drainage as well as visual interest for the project. This is the connection to the existing terrace building over here where the green roof comes into that building. And we had to narrow that entry over there to preserve the existing balconies of that building and directly connect into the elevator lobby. This is an interior rendering of the lounge area of the new building, looking back towards campus across the bridge. These art walls would be movable and probably smaller in the end. This is a three-dimensional ceiling design, which continues all the way through the bridge to the existing campus. You can see the full height glazing of the bridge itself from floor to ceiling. So it's totally transparent in there, as well as the glazing that continues on through the building itself. So, and then the ceiling height, we also increased to 9 feet across the entire length of the bridge, which was also recommended by the Design Commission. This shows some of the specialty mechanical equipment, which will be fully concealed in the ceiling and the floor assembly of the bridge. So none of this will be visible from outside the bridge or inside the bridge at all. And it will also provide full heating, air conditioning, and 100% fresh air ventilation. These are the proposed exterior materials of the bridge. We have curtain wall that runs all the way through. These are the solid light silver gray metal panels that would be at the parapet in the base of the bridge. Those panels would wrap around the bottom edge of the bridge. And then for the center of the bridge, we have a V-shaped along with a sharp corrugated metal. This isn't a Kirby metal, but actually an angular metal that we're proposing to finish in a decorative silver gray modeled metal panel that would be on the underside of the bridge. So the texture of this would provide visual interest as well as diffuse traffic noise. So this basically the design presentation of this. The facade of the bridge itself is actually over 63% glazing. So it is maximized as much as we could absolutely make it. And so I thank you for your time and welcome any questions that you may have about this.
Thank you very much. That was outstanding, and I appreciated the interior in particular. That's really nice. Well done. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I was going to say the exact same thing, Mayor, but my other question is, do you have to be a retired teacher to move in now?
You don't have to be a retired teacher, but you do have to be 62 years of age or older.
Well, I've already passed that, so.
I will, if you give me your number, Commissioner, I'll have sales and marketing give you a call.
I may hold off on that for a little bit. I just want to keep my options open. Thank you.
That's always a wise idea. It's always a wise idea. All right, very good. Thank you for the presentation. Any questions on this, further questions? Commissioner Ryan, did you have a question?
No, I just wanted to make a comment. That was a fascinating presentation. I sometimes have no idea what item on the agenda is going to surprise me, and so far this is it. So thank you, Tim. Thank you, Executive Director Bob. I had no idea the roots of the Twilliger Plaza was about teachers, and I appreciated Commissioner Hardesty's question. I was kind of doing some planning as well, especially after I saw, Peter, your amazing design for the walkway. It went beyond expectations. And it just makes so much sense to link it to the amenities that will be on the east side. So anyway, really well done. It's exciting. It'll be great for that neighborhood. Thank you.
Very good.
Great, thank you.
Is Keelan, is there any public testimony on this item?
No, no one signed up.
All right, it's the emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for the tremendous presentation. That was very interesting. I am a huge fan of sky bridges. I know that they have kind of been looked down on over the years, but it gets rainy here, and in particular the senior centers providing that safe way to get from one building to the other is absolutely crucial. So I'm glad that we were able to amend the code to make them more more easy to do, although they do still have to go through this rigorous process. Thanks to Bob Haley and Tim Herron for your many years of service to the city of Portland and your kindness and patience to me over the last 12 years. I greatly respect the work that you do, and the city is very fortunate to have you. I'm very happy to vote aye.
Ryan?
Yes, I already made my comment, so aye. Thank you.
Hardesty?
aye.
Wheeler?
Well, I want to make a general comment about Toliger Plaza, since we got a presentation on some of the history and the current conditions. I think it's a fantastic facility, and I've known many people who have chosen to live there, and the level of care is unsurpassed, and this is one more extension of that level of care. There is no way that many of the residents of this facility could possibly be able to access both sides of the facility in the absence of a sky bridge. There are definitely some critical safety as well as elevation concerns in that area. And thank you for not building the cheapest alternative. Thank you for actually caring about the architectural integrity and the look and the feel of this. I don't know that I've ever been in a nicer sky bridge than the one that's proposed here, just in terms of really upping the game as far as what a sky bridge can be. It's extremely thoughtful. And I think it's a very positive development for that neighborhood, and I'm very happy to vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next up, last but not least, but
thank
a
you.
Hard act to follow.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. You guys all have a great day. 938, please.
You too.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement between the city and the city of Maywood Park to provide certain building program services within the city of Maywood Park in accordance with Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 455.
Dan Ryan, Commissioner Ryan, you're up.
Yes, thank you, colleagues. Today I'm requesting that the council approve this ordinance providing the mayor the authority to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the city of Maywood Park for the purpose of providing state building inspection program services for Maywood Park. The city of Maywood Park previously received these plan review and building inspection services from the city of Portland from 1986 through 2011. For the last 9 years, Maywood Park has received these services through agreements with the city of Troutdale and most recently the city of Gresham. The agreement with the city of Gresham will end on December 31st, 2020. Hence the emergency. Entering into this new intergovernmental agreement will allow continuity of service for the plan review and building inspection program and ensure building safety for the residents of Maywood Park. Andy Peterson is here from the Bureau of Development Services to present on the ordinance. He is available to answer any questions after the presentation. Hello, Andy. Welcome to the Zoom stage. It's yours. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, and good afternoon. I guess it's still morning. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. As Commissioner Ryan said, the City of Portland has been asked to provide the Oregon Building Inspection Services to the City of Maywood Park. This would include only those programs that are regulated through the State of Oregon Specialty Codes, which would include building, mechanical, electrical, plumbing programs, and a few of the supporting programs that the City of Portland has adopted for exterior retaining walls and those types of things. I've included a map that identifies the location of the City of Maywood Park. It's included as Exhibit B in your packet. Maywood Park is located entirely within the City of Portland, surrounded on all four sides, and consists of approximately 90 lots, primarily built out with single family homes. Over the last 4 years, the permit demand by the residents in Maywood Park has been about 60 permits a year, and we don't anticipate in discussions with Maywood Park that that's going to increase significantly over the next several years. BDS does currently provide sanitation services for City of Maywood Park as part of our agreement with Multnomah County, as and our role as the county sanitarian. There are other agreements with city agencies to provide services within Maywood Park, such as Portland Fire Bureau, and BES does have some pathway for creating agreements for providing sewer services there, although they don't provide it for the city as a whole. BDS does see this as an opportunity to, again, work closely with Maywood Park, providing these building code services and together benefiting from greater coordination between plan review and permitting disciplines where the proposed work may overlap, where, such as with a residential addition that may encroach on an existing septic system, where we currently would be able to provide them with guidance as that work moves forward. Like other portions of the county where BDS already provides building inspection program services, this is another program where we can be working with adjacent communities and sharing both the skills and knowledge of our professional staff and our continuous improvement efforts in the local area. We at BDS are confident we can take on and provide these state building inspection program services to Maywood Park. We look forward to, again, working with the members of that community and their council. That's really it for my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, colleagues. Commissioner Ryan?
No, that must be up from the last time. I'm sorry.
Okay. Anybody have any questions? Does that complete the presentation on this item?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any public testimony on this? It's an ordinance.
No one signed up for this item.
Call the roll, please.
Fritz?
Thank you for the very clear presentation. It's good to see some contract work being done that will help the Bureau and their staff. Aye.
Ryan?
Yes. First of all, thank you, Andy, for the presentation. We're very fortunate that the Bureau of Development Services has the expertise and capacity to provide these turnkey plan review and building inspection services. It is in our best interest and the best interest of the residents of Maywood Park to enter into this IGA, providing the City of Maywood Park continuity of service and ensuring public safety. Aye.
Hardesty?
I want to say I'm looking forward to next year's Maywood Park City Council. A local gentleman I know, Reverend Robin Wisner, will be joining the council in January. And I think this is a really good opportunity for us to continue to deepen those relationships with Maywood Park. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Good presentation. Thanks, Andy. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Keelan, that completes our agenda for this morning, correct?
Yes, it does.
All right. We are adjourned until 2 p.m. Thanks, everybody.